And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars, and welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. Today, we're going to be discussing a fascinating subject, and let me just say, this is a subject of, it's of interest to anyone. It was to me when I began to research and investigate, but it should be to every human being and every person in America, especially to blacks, to black Americans, African Americans. Now, I want to tell you a little bit about my relationship with black Americans. But first, let me tell you what the Bible has to say. Now, regardless of where you stand, God has a stand in this. He has a position. And you better get in line with God. Now, what does God say about the individual races? God says that whosoever will may come. Jesus died on the cross to redeem all of humanity. It doesn't mean all are going to be redeemed because many are wicked and from birth they're wicked and they're going to stay wicked and go into hell. That's just a fact of life. That's as true of the white man or the yellow man as it is for the Jew or the Gentile, white people. In fact, not every Jew, as you know, is white. Many are dark, black. Some come from India, others from North Africa, Morocco, Ethiopia. Now, I'm not going to talk about the DNA of the Jewish bloodline today, but I have written an entire book, DNA Science and the Jewish Bloodline, and I've always believed that DNA is an interesting subject. But more interesting subject is slavery. Yes, slavery. That's what we're going to talk about today. Slavery of the black man. When I say man, I mean women too, of course, and children. And America has a very interesting chapter, as you know, in slavery that extends all the way back into the late 1600s and up to 1865 at the end of the American war between the states, which is commonly called the Civil War. Now, a lot of people have questions about slavery. Now, let me give you the shorthand of it. In America, hundreds of thousands of slaves were brought in from Africa, and of course other areas as well, by slave traders who owned individual ships or even fleets of boats, slave traders. Many of them would bring in hundreds and hundreds of black slaves every year, and there would be slave auctions. And I know I was stationed in the Air Force in Fayetteville, North Carolina, and there they still preserve the old auction place in downtown. And you can go down and you can see exactly where they stood on the podium there, on the platform. And some of them had chains because they were still pretty angry about being brought over. Some were just heathens. They were warriors. They loved to kill. They loved to kill back in Africa. And in fact, the African slaves often were slaves of the blacks. And the blacks were the ones who sold these blacks into slavery. And the slave traders did not go out. You have a misconception if you think they landed their ships in African ports and then they send their soldiers out to gather up all the black people they could and rounded them up into ships. No, no, no. They had contracts, agreements with black tribes, all the various tribes. You know, I'll give you so much money or so much, you couldn't use the currency, of course, but I'll give you so many goods, and you give me so many slaves. And many of them were already slaves to the blacks. So when they came to the United States, they just continued being slaves. Some, however, were independent, were free, and they had been caught by these tribes and pressed into slavery. And they spoke many dialects, what we would call different languages. They did not all speak the same thing, so if you think the blacks could understand each other, not true. Many couldn't understand what the other ones were saying. Who were these slave traders? I mean, were they just white guys that spoke English? Where did they come from? We know that Europe had slavery before America had it. Were they British? Were they Frenchmen? Were they Spanish? Yes, they were all these things. But mostly they were Jews. Ah, yes. This is a subject that cannot be discussed in America because you're an anti-Semite if you tell the truth about Jews. But in fact, over 90% of all the slave traders, that means all those who went to Africa, brought back slaves and sold them for a profit and carried on their slave operations. These slave traders who owned these ships and would bring the blacks back in chains were almost predominantly Jews. Now, if you read Revelation 18, a lot of people say to me, well, does the Bible talk about slavery? Well, yes, because even the Greeks and the Romans and the others owned slaves. And I assure you, the Jews also owned slaves. You can go back in history and find many slaves. Indentured servants, remember that? Oh, the Bible, the Old Testament talks about them. You have a contract, you agree to work for so many years for the, remember the story of the, well, you know about it. And if you wanted a wife, well, if you agreed to work for a man for a certain number of years as his slave or indentured servant, they would call it, that happened too. Now, I became very interested in black people and what happened in the slavery years. Because, you know, I was always told, I come from the South in Beaumont, Port Arthur, Texas. That's right, this side of Louisiana in Texas, on the Neches River. And Texas did not have a lot of slaves back in the slave era. But we had a few. And the people of that area were probably the ones who owned the few slaves. Now, there were 13 states that seceded from the Union. Now, Americans think, because of all the TV propaganda that we see, that the people from these states were all a bunch of black haters, beaters, starvers, and we just treated blacks terribly. The white man did. And they think that everybody owned a plantation and everybody had slaves. I assure you, everybody in the South did not own a plantation. So if you've seen the movie Gone with the Wind, don't think you've seen it all. You haven't seen it all, not in the least. As a matter of fact, very few people owned slaves. Now, most people believe also that the war was fought because the South wanted to keep its slaves, and the North wanted to free the slaves. Wrong. The war was not fought over slavery at all. In fact, read the writings of Abraham Lincoln and you will see that he actually said that he would not fight a war over slavery. But he wanted to keep the Union together. He wanted to keep America as one. He wanted to keep all of the states solid and connected in a union, just as it was in the original Constitution. And so he was infuriated when 13 states seceded. They call themselves the Confederacy of the United States, and they had their own constitution that was very similar to the U.S. Constitution. They had their own Congress, their House, their Senate, the President, etc. They even had a cabinet. They elected a president, Jefferson Davis. But the white men of the South did not own a lot of slaves. The war was not fought over slavery, and let me assure you, it was an incredible, incredible war. There was a loss in almost every home. Somebody died in every home. And the South fought very bravely. And for a while, they not only held off the North, but were winning the victory. It was said that the South also had a better general in charge, Robert E. Lee. Now, Lee, who came, was a West Point graduate, said he did not want to be known as the general of the Confederacy because of the slaves. He said, I did not join the military, I did not agree to be generals to save the institution of slavery. He owned a certain number of slaves, a small number. And before he entered the military, because he'd retired for a number of years and went back to his home in Virginia, he freed the few slaves he had. I can't really recall these 11 or 12 slaves. He freed them. So the general of the South, Robert E. Lee, had no slaves. He freed them. That's sort of interesting, isn't it? People think he must have been a raving maniac, must have had 1,000 slaves and beat them regularly and did not feed them food and all this nonsense. But in fact, he let them go free, and they were free men to do with whatever they wanted to go, wherever they wanted to go to. And there were a number of Southerners who did the same thing. The war was not fought over slavery. But there were some who said, let's use this as a cause. And in the newspapers up north, they tended to accuse the South of slavery and of torture. And of course, there was the book that came out by Harriet Beecher Stowe about Uncle Tom's Cabin. A horrible book. Poor Uncle Tom was treated terribly. He was a Christian. The book actually, if you read it, it really tells you, you want to cry, whether you're North or South, whether you're Confederate or Yankee, as they're called. Of course, we don't find many people identifying as either a Confederate or a Yankee today. We're just Americans. Now, when I was a kid, there were still a number of people that almost kiddingly would say, the South shall rise again. And some people still had Confederate bills in their wallets. I don't know why they did, but they kept them. Of course, when the war ended, they were no good anymore. Everybody threw them out. You could drive down a street and see in a trash can piles of Confederate dollars. They were no good anymore. Now, I've told you that the Jews were the slave traders. If you find a slave auction, you're going to find a Jew nearby who is running things. The Jews were the Masons. And it seems that every well-known Jew, especially all the rabbis, were Freemasons. This may surprise you. A lot of people didn't know it. But even to this day, the Jewish symbol of the six-pointed star is found in Freemasonic lodges throughout the South. And the North, too, for that purpose. You know, I was visiting Richmond, Virginia, the headquarters, let's say, of the South. I was visiting there not too long ago, and I drove into the city of Richmond, into the old part of town, and there was a great, great building. It was an ancient building, an old, old building, and it had a sign outside. It was the Masonic Temple. The Masonic Temple. Right down the street in Richmond, the home of the Confederacy, let's just call it Richmond, Virginia, right down the street from the Masonic Temple was another great building of equal stature and of about equal, you know, in ancient years. That building was the Jewish temple. Not temple, but synagogue. You know, they don't really have a temple as such. They call some of their places temples, but imagine the two most prominent buildings in Richmond, Virginia, was number one, the Masonic Temple, and number two, the synagogue, the Jewish synagogue. And I wondered, how much power did the Jews have? I found out later they were the premier potentates of Freemasonry. The Jews were. I've also found out that the great plantations of the South were owned equally by Jews and by Catholics, Roman Catholics. And very few Protestants owned slaves or plantations. Now I want to say that again. Generally, the slave owners and the slave traders turned out to be Jews or, on a minor note, Catholics. And the Protestants were not involved. Now, Jefferson Davis, the first president, the only president of the Confederacy, was no doubt an esteemed man, but he did believe in slavery. And he had very close ties with the Roman Catholic Church. And he wrote letters to the Pope about how the South was suffering under the tyranny of the North. And the Pope sympathized with him. And on one occasion, I believe that the Pope actually sent him a crown of thorns with jewels also. A crown made up of jewels that looked like thorns. And the Pope encouraged him to persevere. The Pope then favored the South, no doubt about it. And many of the plantation owners were Roman Catholics. And the Protestants, well, they were just like your white trash today, I suppose. But the Jews owned many of the plantations as well. And it seems that they owned most of the slaves. The Jews did. Now, some people believe that the Jews have always been persecuted throughout the decades in the South. But I want to assure you, the Jews were the head of Southern culture. The plantations, when they had their parties, all invited the Jews over. And it was interesting that the Catholics and the Jews worked so close together and were fanatics about keeping slavery. But the Protestants, which made up most of the people probably of the South, were themselves working people. They owned farms, but they did not own slaves. So when you see a movie and you see a huge column of Confederate soldiers dressed in gray, fighting a huge swath of Northern soldiers dressed in blue, and the first thought that comes to your head, well, all those Confederate soldiers all owned slaves. They were all fighting there for the privilege of owning slaves. That's why they died. They died for their slaves. That's ridiculous. You see, propaganda was put out to the effect that the Southerner believed that he was dying for his state. Not really the Confederacy, but for the state that he came from. Kentucky, Louisiana, Texas, Georgia, Alabama, Florida, Virginia, and so forth. He was fighting for his home. He believed he had rights. And he believed in the Constitution, but he believed that the North was a tyranny and that Lincoln was a tyrant. Now, you may disagree with him. I know Lincoln's very popular today, but he wasn't very popular down South. And as a matter of fact, Lincoln authorized his generals not only to attack armies down south, but to attack civilians. And entire civilian populations were bombarded with a cannon. And cities like Vicksburg and others were destroyed. So when your city was destroyed by cannon and your home was destroyed, and you came back and saw what had happened, because you had to leave or you'd be dead, and you came back and home after home had been set on fire, and all the livestock and chickens and so forth had been stolen by the Union troops and taken away, and your women, many of them had been raped, and on, you weren't too pleasant about the Northern troops. The issue, my friend, was not slaves for most people, but for some it was. Now in Richmond, I noticed they had a building in which there was a bronze plaque. And I looked very carefully because there was a Star of David, a six-pointed star on it. And it read 1861 to 1865. And I knew this had been there a long time. And what were they doing? They were commemorating the Civil War, the war between the states. Now, here's what the plaque, the monument, said on it. And please forgive me if I can't say the words good enough here. It was called the Jewish Confederate Monument. The Confederate Jewish Monument. Made up of two granite blocks. Here's what it said. It said, Shemang Yisrael, Adonai Elohendo, Adonai Akod. Hear, O Israel, in blessed and eternal memory of the South's sons and daughters of Abraham, upon the battlefields and home front in Dixie's land, they gave all to the cause of the Confederacy. Did the Jews give all to the cause of the Confederacy? Now, today we're told that the Jews have always helped the black man. They've always been responsible for the civil rights movement. And during the days of Martin Luther King in the 60s, they helped to lead the way. They were the lawyers. They were the marchers. They were the whites who helped the blacks. Yes, the Jews. But why did they do this? Because the fact is that it was the Jew that oppressed the black man. He was the slave trader. And I have a lot to say from different writings. I have two books that I purchased some years ago, and I've been reading these, Volume 1 and 2. Volume 1 is called The Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Jews. The Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Jews. The second is called The Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Jews, Volume 2. Now, I read these books, and these are by some very educated men. And it's interesting that the books note that the Jews have faced blanket expulsion in country after country around the world. In fact, no other race has faced expulsion. The blacks were brought over as slaves, but not the Jews. They came as merchants, as men of money. And they have been accused of monopolization, usury, the selling of cheap goods, bankruptcies, corruption, and so forth. Now, this is all denied by the Jews, of course. They're all lily pure, wonderful people who have never soiled their linen at all. But the blacks have begun to discover the truth about the Jews. These two books I've just told you about, The Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Jews, are hated by Jews everywhere. Don't read those books. They're full of lies. Well, actually, This is the record. These books contain newspaper stories, magazine articles, even advertisements placed by Jews. These are historical records. This is how we find out what happened in the Civil War. Who was in charge? For example, let me give you the example of one man. His name was Judah P. Benjamin. Judah P. Benjamin. It seems that Mr. Benjamin was a plantation owner. He owned about 140 to 150 slaves, and he was fanatical about it. Mr. Benjamin had gotten the eye of somebody who decided to make him a man of great importance. And so, therefore, he was given a special education as a lawyer. And as a lawyer, Mr. Benjamin, who owned this plantation, ran for the U.S. Senate and won. In fact, he was one of the two men that were Jews, the first two Jews in the United States to be senators. Now, Judah Benjamin was a good friend of a very special family named the Rothschilds. And Benjamin, who fought very hard to keep slavery as a senator and gave many impressive speeches on the floor of the Senate in favor of slavery, also was in favor of the secession of the South, thinking he could benefit as a Jew. Well, I'm not going to tell you the whole story about Judah Benjamin. In fact, someday maybe I'm going to write about it. But I want you to know this. Judah P. Benjamin was known as a friend of Jefferson Davis, the president of the Confederacy. In fact, it was said that he was closer to Jefferson Davis than was Mrs. Davis. That they were never seen alone. They were always together. Wherever they were, the two were pals. Now, I'm not going to comment on that, but I think the suggestion is there. Judah P. Benjamin, this Jew, a good friend of Jefferson Davis. And they were never seen except they were together. And it was said that Jefferson Davis's wife was very alarmed about this and very concerned. But let's not talk about her right now. Let's talk about Judah. It seems that Judah P. Benjamin was so influential in the Southern government that he was actually made the Attorney General. He was the Attorney General, sort of like Eric Holder for Barack Obama. Judah P. Benjamin was described by one writer as, quote, this is in a recent article, by the way, in the late 1900s, as, quote, the most important American Jewish diplomat before Henry Kissinger. He was the most eminent lawyer before Brandeis, the leading figure in military affairs before Hyman Rickover, the greatest American Jewish orator, and the most influential Jew ever to take a seat in the U.S. Senate. Now, Judah P. Benjamin also was not only the Attorney General for 9 months, but then he was transferred over to the most important of the Confederacy's cabinet positions. He became the Secretary of War. As such, it was true that next to Davis, Benjamin was the most influential man in the rebel government. I'm going to take a little break now while you're digesting the fact that a Jew controlled the legal processes of the South during the Civil War. Judah P. Benjamin. He was called the Jewish brain behind Jefferson Davis. Interesting, isn't it? I'll be right back after this brief message. I'm Tex Morris. We're looking at the Jewish slave traders, plantation owners, and maybe tyrants of the South. I'll be right back. Hello, friends. Tex Morris. It's so great to be with you today here on Power of Prophecy. And we always love to bring the message of truth. Now, we have many books and videos and audio tapes to offer you. But today I would like to offer you the video, Marching to Zion. Marching to Zion. $25, that takes care of the shipping. It's a wonderful video, and you'll learn about Judaism. What really is Judaism? And why are some Christians promoting Judaism? Why have some Christians, they've become Judaizers? At least that's what the Apostle Paul called these false Christians. He said they were into witchcraft. They've attempted to mix the things of God with the things of the devil, which is Judaism. Well, Marching to Zion is a great video. And in fact, the folks who produced the video went out and said, we're going to speak to the rabbis. And they've interviewed four rabbis. That's interesting. What do the rabbis say? How did they adopt the six-pointed Star of David? Did God give that to them? Or maybe some other personage? What really is the Bible to the Jews? Is the Torah really the chief of their religion, or do they worship the Talmud today? How about the Kabbalah? And what should Christians do as far as Jews? What do you do for a Muslim, a Buddhist? What should you do to the Jew? This fantastic video. By the way, let me confess that I was also interviewed for the video. I was interviewed for it. I didn't know what part they would use. But I guess they've used, 10 or 15 minutes of me talking. So if you can put up with Tex Mars talking in this video, you'll be okay. But they asked me my idea about the Jews, and I gave them the facts as I have investigated and known about these things. The name of the video is Marching to Zion, a total of $25 that takes care of shipping and handling. Please, to get this video, write to us at Power of Prophecy, 1708 Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733. You can go to our website, powerofprophecy.com, powerofprophecy.com, or simply textmars.com. That's TEXEMARRS. Get a lot of people calling and saying, is Teeksy there? Is Teeksy there? Well, it's Tex, but I don't mind you calling me Teeksy. It's okay. That's all right. Well, you can also phone us toll-free, 1-800-234-9673. 1-800-234-9673. As for the video, Marching to Zion, I think you'll appreciate it, and you'll discover the truth about Judaism and Christianity as well. And now let's return to our regular program. We're talking about slave traders, Jewish slave traders, and the Deep South. During the years 1861 to 1865, during the Lincoln War, some call it, the war between the states. You know, I was just discussing with you Judah P. Benjamin. He was the Attorney General, but he was also Secretary of War. And by the way, if you get all the old Confederate notes, you know, the $10 bill, the $20, you'll find that his picture is on one of them. He got his picture on the currency of the South, Judah P. Benjamin. They said he had a lot of influence around Jefferson Davis. But when the war ended, a lot of the Southern gentlemen were frightened for their lives. And they fled, and they went into hiding, but not Jefferson Davis. He gave himself up. He was a gentleman. And so he, you know, well, so the same thing happened to Robert E. Lee. He naturally surrendered. But not Judah Benjamin. Evidently, he was guilty of a lot of things back then. In fact, many people believe that Judah P. Benjamin was one of the organizers of the assassination on Mr. Lincoln. They say that Judah P. Benjamin, being a Jew and a Mason, yes, he was a Freemason, was also a friend of John Wilkes Booth and the Booth family. Now, I want to tell you something very strange. But Judah P. Benjamin, plantation owner, slave owner, Secretary of War, and Secretary of State, and Attorney General for the South, the Confederacy, when the South was defeated, he immediately got, he had a little ship, and he had prepared the ship, and he and his family got in that ship, and they took off. And they went into hiding on one of the islands, you know, St. Thomas or one of the, you know, Jamaica, one of the islands. He went and went into hiding there. And then they waited for a British ship, and evidently the government of Great Britain sent a ship to get Judah Benjamin. Why were they so interested in bringing Judah Benjamin back to England? He was an American, a Jew. But they brought him back on a British ship. He and his family went back to England, went into hiding, refused to be given up. Now, what corruption he had done in America, I don't know, but I know that during the war, he made several prominent trips, and it was suggested that he went to see Rothschild in a bid to get money for the South, to get more money for the South. Was Rothschild involved in the conspiracy to keep the South going at war? Well, Benjamin was his American agent then. It turned out that Benjamin was made an attorney in Great Britain. In fact, the Queen favored him. The Queen of England favored him and made him her attorney. I want to say that again. He became the barrister, meaning attorney, for the Queen. He was the top lawyer in England. And there he lived the rest of his days. By the way, they say he wrote a book about the law in England. A book about the law in England. And it's still sold as a textbook. The laws that he wrote about are still good, the laws. And it's still sold as a textbook among the lawyers, or people gaining the barrister position in England. How could this man, this Jew, who was known as the brain behind the Confederacy, end up in England as the top lawyer for the Queen and the Crown? Well, you know, Mr. Rothschild was in England at the time, and it was stated at the time by many that he controlled the British government behind the scenes. And Benjamin was his lawyer as well, apparently. Isn't that interesting? Very, very interesting. Now, it seems that the Jews were not only slave traders, but they were the most cruel of the slave traders. Let me read to you from page 82 of volume 1 of The Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Jews. It seemed that some of the Africans rebelled down in South America. You see, the Jewish slave traders not only traded slaves in the United States, but they also traded them down in Brazil and in the other countries of South America. Now, an observer of the slave traffic in the Caribbean noted that, quote, every slave trader, that's Jewish, who obtained licenses, you had to go get a license, for 100 Africans casually loaded five times that number in their ships. So they could only get a license to bring in 100 slaves, and they would bring in 500. Well, there's your Jew for you. It says, he was given free rein to sell the rest of his cargo. The slave trader Manuel Batista Perez, a Jew, matter-of-factly listed in his account book for 1618, that was the year, that he had bribed the governor, treasury officials, and various minor functionaries with slaves and cash totaling 6,170 pesos to get them to let him land twice as many slaves as he had registered. Wow. Now, it seems that there were a number of inquisitions by the Jews. When the Jews rebelled, the Jewish slave owners and owned all the plantations of rubber and oil and olive oil, and especially molasses and sugar cane. And they cooperated with the Jesuit priests and Spanish authorities. The Catholic Jesuits were involved in this little business deal too. And it seems that, well, they were quite cruel to their slaves. Here's an account of one. I tell you, it's so vicious. I hesitate to read it, but it's about these slaves that rebelled and tried to escape. And what happened to one of them? They cut off his hand, let him bleed to death, beat him severely. Wow. Just an amazing thing. Oh, let's see if I can find that story. It was just, I don't know. It's just so, the trades, you know, you've seen movies like Mandingo and these other horrible movies of what slaves were like in America. And I think many of them were, you know, excessive. I don't think the slaves were treated that bad. But in South America, they were. The Jews had no restraints there. The dictatorships locally and such, they let the Jews have whatever they wanted to do. And they cheated on the number of slaves they brought in, and they're a great number. And if you go to Brazil today, it's mainly a black country. It's a black country. There was the Barbados also. And it's just, wow. Now, there were pirates in those days too, my friends. Pirates. Now, I know you've probably seen these movies, Caribbean, Pirates of the Caribbean, with Mr. Johnny Depp or whatever. I've never seen one of those movies, but I understand the kids like the pirate theme. Did you know that Jean Lafitte was a Jewish pirate? I never knew that. Now, when I was a kid, I enjoyed pirate movies. And of course, Jean Lafitte was a very honorable man, and you know, he treated everybody good, but he was a pirate. And he had the skull and crossbones. Well, I should have realized then, the skull and crossbones atop the ship, that's not that's not a very good symbol for anybody, is it? Well, it seems that Jean Lafitte was a Jewish pirate, and he imported Africans about the year 1808. And plantation owners all along the Mississippi River managed to purchase more and more slaves from Jewish pirate Jean Lafitte. He smuggled goods and slaves into Louisiana, about 50 miles west of New Orleans, all the way up to St. Louis, and of course, nearby New Orleans. It says Lafitte marshaled the forces of the area's maritime thugs in a massive operation against free trade. And he was complimented on this by the rabbis, who told him he was doing a great work for God. I guess it was their Jewish God, you know. But Jean Lafitte stole other people's blacks. You thought that when he would stop a ship, he would only take the gold or whatever. But no. He was robbing other slave ships of their slaves. He was a Jewish slave trader, and he was robbing these other ships. It says, here it describes Jean Lafitte. It says, standing on a hillside before a motley assemblage of almost 500 saber-rattling sea robbers and cutthroats, knife and gun brandishing felons and desperados, the Jewish Creole dandy stood firm, speaking in his gentlemanly fashion. Lafitte dispatched 60 ships throughout the Caribbean They went to hunt the Spanish slave ships. They let the Jewish slave ships go, evidently. And then he held weekly slave auctions at his retreat at Barataria on the Louisiana coast. The trade was under the total control of Lafitte, and no barbarian dared disobey. Amsterdam Jewish merchants were involved in arming Lafitte's ships of terror. You know, we just get wrong history, don't we? I didn't know that a Jew was the brain of the Confederacy, that he was the Attorney General, that his picture is on the currency of the South, that he was seen constantly with President Jefferson Davis. Even Jefferson Davis's wife was alarmed, the historians say. I didn't know that Jean Lafitte was a Jew, that he owned 60 ships, that he took over and commandeered other ships by non-Jews. Incredible. It says, auction houses prefer Jean Lafitte's African product. They were considered sturdy and healthy, for only the hardiest blacks survived confinement in his slave ships, not to mention the contagious diseases and brutal treatment that marked their months-long journey. As many as 400 blacks were sold in a single day and smuggled into New Orleans by Lafitte and his agents. His operation was so extensive that he was said to monopolize Louisiana's import trade and commerce and the commerce of the entire Mississippi Valley. By 1812, it was claimed that Jewish parent Jean Lafitte had become, quote, the greatest trader in all the West. Now, 1814. Remember the British wanted to take over America again? Now, the Brits had their problems with slavery, and they eventually outlawed it. But they still remember their ownership of America. And it was about 1812, wasn't it, that we fought a big war with them again. They burned Washington, D.C. down and so forth. Well, in any case, let's just go on a little bit here about the commercial inclinations of the Jews and slavery in North America. In this book, there are numerous cases of the slave trade. For example, the First Bank of the United States. I think that's the Rothschild Bank. It was said that Philadelphia merchant Isaac Moses, a Jew, was one of the chiefs of that bank. We also know that Haim Salomon was called the financier of the American Revolution. That's back in the days of George Washington, Thomas Jefferson. Haim Salomon, a Jewish merchant, also connected with Rothschild. And the firm of Levi, Franks, and Simon in 1751 became the most powerful merchant conglomeration of its time. It was their 250-ton, 10-gun ship Mirtilla that brought the 2,000-pound Liberty Bell to the Philadelphia State House. Now, on one hand, they would bring slave traders' ships in. On the other hand, they brought the Liberty Bell in. And Jacob Franks, who owned this firm, is said to have gotten his share of business in armaments and slaves during a war in England, which gave Britain a monopoly in the slave trade. So, these are just incredible facts, by the way. Let me go on a little further here. Here's a quote for you. When a northern newspaper noted that Jews were the most vicious of the slave traders and owned most of the slave trading ships, the Jewish community responded by branding that newspaper anti-Semitic. Well, they haven't changed, have they? That was over 200 years ago. They saw that the Jews were the slave traders, and they reported in their newspaper, and the Jewish community branded them as anti-Semitic. Now, here's what the newspaper reported back. This wasn't some frilly little newspaper that was scared of being called anti-Semite. They said, quote, "The Jewish community is wrong, in error. Nearly the whole of the Jewish population voted the disunion ticket." In other words, to secede. Almost all of the Jews voted to secede. They voted for the South. We thought they were liberal. They were all goody-goodies, didn't we? Helping the black man. They were the slave traders. It says, "The charge that we have desired to awaken religious persecution against those of the Jewish faith is false. We mention them because comprising so large a body of our voting population, they had nearly all voted for secession. We chronicle this fact, and it cannot be denied." Well, there you go. Southern Jews were particularly fervent in their advocacy of slavery and the rights of the South. They often mention the slavery that was common in the Jewish kingdom and said that God was simply giving them slaves in the New World. Well, there you go, my friends. Now, Jewish Confederate soldiers also fought in the South. Alabama gave 135 soldiers, Arkansas 53, Louisiana 224, South Carolina 182, Texas 103, and so forth and so on. Rabbi Korn, a writer at that time, said the Jews of the Confederacy are loyal. Nowhere else in America have Jews been accorded such an opportunity to be complete equals as in the Old South. The race distinctions fostered by slavery had a great deal to do with this. When you had black slaves, you didn't worry about the Jews being under you, did you? No. Now, Judah P. Benjamin, who was Secretary of War, he was Attorney General. Now, Judah P. Benjamin of the Confederate government wrote in the Memphis Daily Appeal on September 27, 1861, he said, quote, "The Israelites," that's what he called the Jews, "of Memphis are behind none in showing their devotion to the South by taking up arms to her defense." So he said, the Israelites of Memphis are behind none. Lewis Killen reported in his newspaper, "Jewish Southerners were loyal to the Confederacy and supported slavery with greater unity than their northern co-religionists opposed it. Even the Jewish women were passionate in their pro-slavery views." The Jewish female population of the South were virulent in their hatred of Lincoln and fanatical in upholding the Confederacy. The Jewish ladies of Charlotte sent $150 to the families of the soldiers of the Confederacy. Quote, "With our prayer to Almighty God for their safety." Wow. Now we finally get to an area that's sort of a sad and sordid affair. The rape of black women slaves. It turned out that Jews were also among the rapists. Let's go back to Jean Lafitte, the Jewish pirate operating in the Caribbean. This man, according to the secret relationship between blacks and Jews, he also bred black women for sexual purposes. Now, Rabbi Sharfman, who wrote a book called Jews on the Frontier, said this, "Most desired were the females from French Senegal. They were prized higher than the males. They possessed fine figures with silky black hair that flowed to their waist and knees." French and Spanish plantation owners in Santo Domingo, by selective breeding, had produced an exotic type they called Les Sirenes. Wow. These, whom Southerners call serpent women, had remarkable, exquisite facial features, small hands and feet, thin bodies. Almost all of them were sought as mistresses, and Lafitte maintained a number of tantalizing serpent women at Grand Isle across from Barataria Pass. He turned Grand Isle into an island of pleasure, saloons for drinking and gambling, and bardeaux lavishly outfitted. Les Sirens, the serpents, were among as many as 200 alluring females there from all the nations. These beauties offered guests a combination of Lafitte's delights and orgies of the renowned New Orleans swamp. You know, the Jews own all the casinos today. They own the Sands, they own all of the great casinos of today, owned by the Jews. And here we see a case where Jean Lafitte, a pirate, but a Jew, bred women for sexual purposes and carried on with a casino in the, yes, in the Caribbean, just like they have them now. Well, it seems that the Jews didn't mind being slave owners. It went right along with their Talmud and Kabbalah. And after all, it says in the Jewish Talmud, called the Babylonian Talmud, that when their kingdom has come, we will be their slaves. We Gentiles, you and I, will be their slaves. The chief rabbi of Israel just 2 years ago gave a sermon in which he said, the Gentiles will serve us. Those who do not will die. The Gentiles will serve us. Those who do not will die. Well, we've had a program today on the secret relationship between blacks and Jews, the Jews as the slave masters. Now, why did they change in the 60s and suddenly take up the cause of civil rights? Was it not because they sought to drive a wedge between the blacks and the Gentile whites? Of course it is. And I can show you the writings of many rabbis that admit to such. So, whatever land they find themselves, the Jew says, I'm not a citizen here. I'm a citizen of Israel. And so in the United States today, where there are 7.5 million Jews, the majority of them say, we're not Americans. We're of Israel. And Israel will take them in if they are, if they can prove their Jewish generational stand, even if they are committed criminals. And there are many criminals living in Israel today that came from the United States. Well, I'm Tex Mars. It's been a great pleasure being with you today. We've looked at the Jewish slave traders. Maybe you and I had a little bit different idea of the South. Now, am I a Southerner? Yes, I guess you might say I am, but, well, there are a lot of misconceptions about the South. But most Southerners fought and died for their home, for their family, for their state, and yes, for the South. They were not slave owners. They were not rich. They didn't own plantations. And we should have pity on them and their sacrifices. I'm Tex Mars. Tune in each week during the same time and discover the power of prophecy.